ranked one of America's top research universities, the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries on UWM today. Here's the host, Tom Lujack, Vice Chancellor of University Relations.
The racial equity protests around the country, sparked by the death of George Floyd, have shed new light on longstanding issues of race and inequality in the United States. Here in Milwaukee, the protests have once again highlighted the impact of the segregationist practices that were once common in the area and that have contributed to socioeconomic inequality for people of color in the region. On this edition of UWM Today, we're joined by David Pate, Associate Professor and Chair of UWM's Department of Social Work in the Helen Bader School of Social Welfare. David is an expert on how Black men are affected by the social welfare system and the challenges that they face in trying to attain economic security in our society. He's been a frequent commentator on the racial equity movement here in Milwaukee. Welcome back to today's program, David. Good to have you with us.
Oh, thank you so much, Tom, for inviting me back.
Dave, a new study by the African American Leadership Association here in Milwaukee shows that our city is the worst large metropolitan area in the country when it comes to the well-being of African Americans. As we are sitting here in this summer of discontent, let's talk about those inequities that Blacks experience here in Milwaukee on a regular basis.
Well, you know, Tom, unfortunately, Milwaukee has been a holder of many number ones. Unfortunately, some of the number ones we are not very proud of, particularly with the most recent pandemic of COVID. We were the first city to really give racial data around the deaths around COVID, and Blacks were, we had the highest number of Blacks who died as a result of the COVID-19 or the coronavirus pandemic that we're experiencing right now. And that's due to the fact that so many people do not have access to public health, to healthcare. As you know, Milwaukee was the first city in the country last May to identify racism as a public health issue. And one of the things that the county is doing now that really is important is that they are saying that they want access to health care to be one of the ways that they reduce issues of health disparity, but also inequities around health care. Another issue of importance for Milwaukee is that Milwaukee has the highest rate of Black mortality of any city in the country. It's about 1,054-55 people to per 100,000 deaths, where that number is just not, is just one of the highest anywhere, more than Philadelphia, which also has a very high rate of mortality rates for Blacks. But in addition to having adult mortality rates that are very high, Milwaukee also has an infant mortality rate that is one of the highest in the country as well. So when you look at adult deaths and you look at infant deaths, Black people are not doing very well. We've always had the most segregation, and we've always been labeled as the most segregated city, and that maintains to be an issue within the city of Milwaukee. And people don't have adequate housing or housing that allows them to go somewhere every day to wash up and sleep comfortably, to take care of their well-being and health needs. They're not going to be able to have a very healthy mentally or physical life. So there's a number of issues that are very much impacting the city directly. But nationally, there's a lot of other stats I can share at some point that really you get to see very clearly in the city of Milwaukee as well.
How did Milwaukee find its way to the bottom of the list when it comes to providing support and services for Black people?
Well, I think that it's not just in Milwaukee. Unfortunately, it does have that distinction, but there's cities like Philadelphia as well that have really bad rates. The one thing about Milwaukee that's unique, Milwaukee's in a state that is predominantly white. Milwaukee's in a state that has very poor outcomes for Blacks, but has historically had very good outcomes for white families around education, around jobs. And also, race is an issue that's very different in a Midwestern place like Milwaukee, like Wisconsin versus some of the East Coast as well as West Coast cities. Milwaukee also was a place that many Blacks did not migrate to until very, very late in the century. When jobs were very plentiful here and people were doing extremely well, when Blacks did migrate here, they were given a certain part of the town to live in. That was not seen as the best place to live. So they got the worst part of Milwaukee. But also they were at the tail end of getting those industry jobs that allow so many people to become part of the middle class. And therefore, the whole idea of Black migration here, they got those who were able to get the benefits and reek in the benefits of what industry was doing at the time in Milwaukee, from the beer industry to the car industry to the lock industries. Those they were able to get some of that, but many did not get that. And so therefore, there was not the infrastructure that was laid or foundation for many of the Black families that did relocate here.
And then, of course, back in the late 70s and early 80s, you saw the legs knocked out of the support that many blue-collar workers, both mm-hmm. Black and white, saw mm-hmm. when some of the big metal-bending industries here began to close up and ship operations mm-hmm. Either out of the state or out of the country. That really had a devastating impact on the status of the middle class across the board here in Milwaukee.
You're exactly right, Tom, because people like our fellow scholars at UW, such as Mark Levine and his colleagues, have talked about this in numerous papers about when you look at the whole idea of the infrastructure of what is Milwaukee and how basically, and to be honest, just to understand that the labor force tends to favor men, labor force tends to pay men better, and those jobs that were seen as masculine jobs for those who were high school educated, were getting jobs that allowed them to take care of their families and allow them to be able to move to a space better than what they came to Milwaukee with. And those jobs were just not available to many Blacks. But also there was issues of discrimination that were still around. Many Blacks were still fighting for the right to be recognized in the same way as whites and others in this country. And therefore, that was also another factor that was real in the late 60s, early 70s.
So you've seen the Black Lives Matter protest unfold here in Milwaukee as they have in other parts of the country. What impact do you think that they've had so far?
I mean, I think the impact of the Black Lives Matter movement and unfortunately the deaths of people like George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and others is that as people are, I think there's been like a intersection of two things going on here. And we really do have two pandemics, and one just was finally recognized. There's a pandemic of poverty. And then there's a pandemic of this health issue that we're all confronted with. And neither one has been handled very well, in my opinion, as someone who's analyzing the situation. The poverty pandemic has been going on, and we've been allowed to live our lives and not have a discussion. There has not been one major discussion on poverty amongst any of our presidential candidates and very few of those who are currently in office. We don't recognize poverty as an issue that's real in our country. Because poverty is not just Black, it's also rural whites, it's also Latinos, it's also Native Americans. But I do think what the Black Lives Matter movement has done more recently is forced us all to look at what is going on with our country, what are the structural issues that have been put in place that have allowed us to function in the way we do, because this is a structural issue. When you were talking about the title of the show being a racial equity movement, I'm glad you brought up the term Black Lives Matter, because it's about Black people right now. And that's what brought this to an issue, because if you look at any scale, Blacks are still the most segregated group of anyone in this country. That's known through much of the scholarship that's written out there. Black people have not had any wealth growth in 70 years. Of all the races and ethnicities, Blacks have had the worst wealth growth of anyone. In terms of looking at wealth of Black people, it takes 11 and a half Black families to equal the wealth of one white family. That's documented in our country. But we don't talk about that. We look at it as those people are being lazy. We look at it as if they're not working hard enough, when there's some real structural reasons that have been documented through the federal government, through state policy, through city policies that have maintained that. And the Black Lives Matter movement is saying that we just want people who are Black or of African descent to be recognized in the same way that those who are their counterparts have been recognized and given access to policies and practices in this country.
You mentioned up until now the presidential campaign, which is beginning to get into full gear, has not really focused on the issue of poverty across the board. You just don't mm-hmm. see that, I think, in any of the television commercials. Do you think that someone is going to step up? Do you think that will be an issue that will be front and center between now and the beginning of November?
I think it will, Tom. I think that we will have more discussions only because everybody's suffering now. That's not a good thing, but it's a good thing for the discussion because people are being evicted. People can't pay their mortgages. People have bills they can't. I mean, everybody. Right now, people are really hurting. So I think that the people who are the people being those of Americans are going to force people to really deal with the fact of how am I going to feed my child? How am I going to deal with their healthcare needs? I don't get the extra $600 check, $600 in my unemployment check anymore. In fact, I may not even be getting that unemployment check anymore. What are you going to do to make me want to vote for you? What are you going to do to make my life better and I can stop this pain I'm feeling every day? So I do think it's going to be a real issue, but I do think also that we as American citizens have to demand that our politicians listen to those issues at this point in time.
You mentioned earlier the fact that Milwaukee County is going to make as one of its initiative priorities a look at bringing about racial justice, racial equity, and an evening of the scale, if you will, here. Of course, mm-hmm. Dave Crowley is a black man, African-American, elected as Milwaukee mm-hmm. County's first underrepresented county executive, person from an mm-hmm. underrepresented class. And at the same time, over in Milwaukee City Hall, you have Cavalier Johnson, an African-American man who is the president of the Common Council. That really is momentous in this city's history, isn't it, to have two black men at the head of the two largest units of local government in the state of Wisconsin?
I think it's momentous, but I do want to clarify. I want to really discuss something I just talked to someone earlier today. You know, just because the people are black and the issues are seen as black issues, they're really not black issues, even though because Milwaukee is having its own issues and challenges for historical reasons. But we have two black people who are in very prominent positions who are progressive in their thoughts and willing to make sure people understand what does it mean that we have everyone receive the benefits they need to receive. I think that that's something I think we unfortunately get caught up in is that because if it's a black issue, then we need a black person. Not always. I think you have to really make sure the person who's in charge understand and is willing to do what's best for everybody. Because as something I learned in a TED talk I did one time, I talked about the fact that when I went to Africa and I told the people I was African American, they said, well, you're not from Africa. How can you say you're African American? You're a black American. And you should realize and embrace all of what America owes you as a black person. And I've never forgot that. And I've always thought about the fact that everybody in this country who was born here is American, whether we're black or white or brown, and race is a social construction. And therefore, whatever I am, I'm born an American, therefore I'm deserving of what every single American is getting in this country to do well So therefore, I'm very excited that David Crowley, Commissioner Crowley, is in charge. I'm very excited about the city council leader as well, because there are two people who I know, based on what I've heard thus far, are about really making change that's progressive and important and appropriate for the city.
You're listening to UWM Today here on WUWM. Good to have you with us this week. I'm Tom Lujack, and joining us on today's program is David Pate. He's chair and associate professor of social work at the Helen Bader School of Social Welfare. We're talking about racial equality here in Milwaukee. David, on previous programs, you've joined me to talk about research that you're doing with black men who have become mm-hmm. parents and mm-hmm. the challenges that they have to be a good dad, how they can mm-hmm. find a way to both be present and be supportive of the child that they are bringing into the world along with the mother. So you have, you know, daily contact with guys who are living the very problem we've been talking about here of being black and being in a community that is still highly segregated, still does not provide equality. What do you hear in terms of their hope? I mean, is there hope as you sit down and talk to people who are facing all of these challenges? Are they discouraged to the point of just giving up, or do you see that there is room for them to see a future?
I mean, they definitely see a future, and they definitely have hope. They definitely want to do what's best for their children. They definitely want to be in a better space. It's just that, unfortunately, people are not, people have an opinion of someone the moment they look at them. And if your opinion of a Black person is that you don't trust them, you think they're lazy, do you think they're not someone you want around your children, then that's pretty hard. I've given the example on this show or others where I, as a researcher, am often stopped by the police just because I'm Black. And I know that's the reason why I'm being stopped. When I'm doing research in very poor communities, they wonder why I'm there. They wonder what I'm doing. And I have to keep it confidential because I'm interviewing people for my work. And I often ask the policeman, why did you stop me? Well, because you were driving this car. Well, that's interesting. And I think about the fact that someone with a PhD who has a nice home and a wife and a child who I go to and feel secure in my neighborhood, am not able, I can brush that off. It may make me frustrated, but I can brush it off. But if you're living in a place where you're not certain about your day-to-day and you're always viewed as someone who's the problem and not as someone who can be a contributor, that starts to wear on you after a while. That you start to wonder whether or not you have value in a place that's called America. You start to wonder whether or not they really mean it when they say we want everyone to do well in this country. Because you're basically under surveillance from the point of birth. And I worry about my own kids like that, who I have an adult son. And I worry about him every single day. He was living in Milwaukee for some time and he just left because he couldn't handle that anymore. The fact that you're just stopped at random when he's going to work and he was working in the suburbs. And I as a parent have to worry about, will my son be shot? Will my son be misidentified as someone who they think is the problem? Because it's happened to me. And so those are things that all Black parents have to do on top of these, as you say, hopeful. Yeah, they're very hopeful until you deal with some of the policies and practices that are institutionalized and structural in our country. That's real. I mean, that's an everyday issue for many Black parents.
So. You mentioned suburbs, and here in Milwaukee, we've seen many white people who live in the suburbs, which still are mm-hmm. largely segregated, de facto mm-hmm. perhaps, but still not representative of the population as a whole here. You saw a lot of people turn out for the Black Lives Matter mm-hmm. rallies and protests. You see yard signs up mm-hmm. In communities where you might never have seen them that say Black Lives Matter. Does that encourage you that we have turned the corner and that there is a new awakening, or are you fearful that this is a summer sentiment and one that may not last?
Honestly, I am concerned, but at the same time, I'm very hopeful. I mean, I can only do the work I do unless I'm hopeful, because I see too many issues in our country that are very sad, make me very sad. I feel I'm one of the luckier Black people who have done well. I'm someone who was very poor in my life and happened to be able to, in the place where I'm now a professor and have a PhD, which I think is wonderful. But if someone was to look at, I'm no different than many of the people I interview in terms of my own life. I just happen to be in a different space based on some very wonderful connections and really good people who saw what I had to offer as a child. I do think that some of this, for some people, is kind of sexy to do right now. And for some people, they're very serious about it. And I hope that those who are seeing this as something they should do because it's a sexy thing to do or it's hip to do, maintain that same energy. Because I know when I taught my Black Lives Matter class only 4 years ago, I thought I was putting my life at risk, to be honest. I had to have police escorts a couple of times in my car. I got really hateful emails from people about my class being taught, but I had wonderful support from my dean, from the chancellor, and from others about the class I was teaching. But we're now 4 years later. It's now the sexiest and most popular thing to do. So I have to admit, I'm not totally pessimistic. I'm very optimistic in many ways. But I'm hoping that if people really want to be in this whole discussion around what does Black Lives Matter really means, it means that we're not saying no one else's life is more important. We're saying all lives are important, and that particularly Black lives want to be recognized as important like everybody else's. And unfortunately, there's a number of federal documents will show you that Black lives have not mattered since 1619, to be honest. We've seen tremendous progress in Black lives, but we still have a long way to go. If you look at Black lives across, black lives right now, 61% of all black people make less than minimum wage daily. 61%. That's ridiculous. And if you look at the Census Bureau, this is not numbers I'm making up. Just look at your Census Bureau. It'll tell you that, that those numbers, and I'm sorry, it was 54%. I'm thinking of another number, 54, still bad. 54% of all black people make less than a minimum wage on a daily basis to raise their kids. That's unacceptable. So we need to figure out why is that and what holds people back. Another statistic, black young men, we have data on, make who have a college degree make less money than a high school white school, a white high school dropout in terms of wealth. They have, while white high school dropout has more wealth over time than a black college graduate at this point in history.
And yet education is supposed to be the great equalizer, isn't it?
I'm saying this to say people still should go to school because it does help. It's just that we should remember that wealth is very different than income. Wealth is when you have a house. Wealth is when you have some property. Wealth is when you have a pension. Wealth is when you don't have more debt than what you earn. So a lot of black people who go to college may make a lot of money, but they don't have the wealth that when something like COVID happens, they're okay. Most Americans have less than $500 in their savings account. And then when you look at it by race, it's very different. And then when you bring gender in that, it's even more, it's even a lot worse. So we need to really look at what's going on here. Even more recently, looking at the United States Post Office debate right now, a large number of people who work for the United States Post Office are black people. At least 30, almost 30%. And then we had this issue around, we don't want to fund the post office. And that's a job that allows you to do fairly well. And so if we don't fund our post office and 30% of those are people who are black or people of color, what does that mean? I mean, it's not, they don't have many options. They don't have the same historical, structural assets that have been allowed to be passed down to them from their family to allow them to be okay. And so it's a real issue that we need to talk about.
You know, in your role as head of the social work department at UW-Milwaukee, you're in regular contact with students. Mm-hmm. What do they tell you when you lay out these stats? Young people, I presume a mix of white and black mm-hmm. and Hispanic. Mm-hmm. Are they surprised by this? Are they concerned? Is there empathy there?
I mean, all of the above. I mean, I love teaching. I love teaching. I can't say that enough. And what I find is with my students who are white, who come from up north or the suburbs of Waukesha or other places like that, and I challenge them to, one can challenge me because I'm not the final word. I think, unfortunately, students often think the teacher says it must be right. And that's not true because this teacher makes mistakes. And I think a lot of teachers make mistakes. But so what I get the students to do is find the answers, find something that if I'm wrong. And they do, they're very surprised by the numbers because what they often say is, I was raised to have a colorblind look that we're all the same. And colorblindness is injustice. If we don't talk about the real issues of what it meant to be Chinese or Native American or black or Latino in this country, and you say we're all the same, we all have the same historical background, that's not the truth. And you're doing a disservice to your child, to your grandchildren, to yourself, to not know what is America, what's the real foundation of America? Because America is a wonderful country. I've been all over the world, and I've had the advantage of doing that as an adult to see, I've seen the world, and I know how it operates. And I have to admit, when I come back to America often, I'm very excited to be back. Because of the possibilities that are here for every American. And so the students, when they hear me give them a historical foundation, when they hear me give them a theoretical foundation, and I give them the reality of what is America, they're very appreciative. And I still have students who talk to me 10 years later to say that information really made a difference in my life.
You are responsible, you and your colleagues are responsible for turning out that next generation of social workers, people who mm-hmm. are going to be on the front line. And again, thinking about the research that you've done in terms of how best to support black men who are parents, do you see a need to change the way that we prepare social workers to deal with this heavy lift that we have in front of us? Or is it just do more of what you've been doing?
No, I think that we definitely need to do more work around cultural competence of how you deliver services to people who don't look like you, and to really have people have an opportunity to understand their own implicit bias. I feel we all have bias, whether we want to admit it or not. And, you know, that's okay. But if you admit it and figure out what that is and how do you want to deal with that moving forward, that's a good thing. I mean, we live in a country where bias is a reality. We're taught how to be biased from birth. We have to figure out what that is that we want to keep ingrained in us. But with our students who are social workers, we're doing a good job. I know we're doing a good job right now. We're even redoing some of our curriculum and redoing some of our classes so that we're able to provide students with an opportunity to understand how they can provide the best services to people who don't look like them so that they'll be better off in the end.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, these social workers don't just stay here in Milwaukee. They do go to cities large and small, and having someone with this urban experience trained here and then working in a small town out in central Wisconsin can be another way of helping to change attitudes, correct?
Exactly, and some of them even go in the police force. Some of them go as probation officers. I think it's important for them to all know that, particularly right now, of understanding, you know, what you're good at and how you do it and how people are different than you, but that doesn't mean they're bad people. You just have to understand the differences that they bring to the table and respect them.
Just a minute or so left. In terms of your own research, do you think the Black Lives Matter movement that we've seen really blossom this summer is going to change anything you're doing in terms of the questions that you're going to be asking?
It definitely does. I mean, I'm doing research right now where I definitely ask families. I'm doing some research for the state right now where we're looking at child care issues. And I've been asking families, how are they coping during the pandemic? But also, what are some of the things that they are having to deal with when they're not able to work? And most of the families I'm working with are making less than $20,000 a year, and they may have two children. And it's pretty saddening. But people are still coping, and they're still very optimistic about it's going to be okay. Spirituality is really important to them, and it's requiring me to really understand how do people who have less resources make ends meet because they don't have that money for a rainy day. So it's definitely a part of my work moving forward.
Well, David, we thank you so much for taking time today to share your thoughts. We wish you the very best, both in the research and in the classroom, as you prepare that next, as I said, generation of people who will help run the social service system here in Wisconsin and beyond. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Dave Pate, Chair and Associate Professor in the Social Work Department at UWM's Helen Bader School of Social Welfare, our guest on this edition of UWM Today. That's all for this week's program. Thanks for taking some time to learn about the difference that UWM makes through the people and the programs that we have on our campus. We'll see you next week at the same time. Take care, everybody. I'm Tom Lujack.
You've been listening to UWM Today with host Tom Lujack, the weekly program where you get to meet the people behind one of America's top research universities, the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Playing a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin, UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Learn more at uwm.edu.